Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. I'm John Gibson, and with me, as usual, is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing well, yeah. It's nice to be recording here early in the evening on a Sunday after a whole slate of day games.
Great games, great weekend games, great series, some really great plays and everything. But before we get to all that stuff, I have a quick announcement. One World Sports informed me late last month that it would not continue showing Giants games in the United States, and therefore it would not extend our deal for another season. So we would like to take the time to thank the folks there for 3+ great years. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Zach. We wish all the folks there at One World Sports the best, and we had a great time. Jim and I, by the way, are working on a blog site, website project, so we will keep you posted on how that goes. But in the meantime, we have a great chat with Brian Bogusevic of the Buffaloes, and we're going to talk about a whole bunch more, including close plays and answer listener questions and everything. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay. Well, I had a chance to talk to Brian Bogusevic the other day for the second time. We had a chat at Cebu Dome, and he's really interesting because the first time we spoke, we principally spoke mostly about how difficult it is to be both a pitcher and an outfielder. Now, Brian,
don't go Shohei.
That's right. You know us, and we pretty much can't go one show without mentioning Shohei Ohtani. So here's the plug.
Gratuitous, as it might
gratuitous.
Be.
Gratuitous. Yeah. Well. Okay. You're giving gratuitous a bad name there. Okay. Brian threw 330 2/3 innings as a professional before he became an outfielder, although I think his one inning with the Houston Astros was after he became an outfielder.
Okay. So that doesn't count.
So, okay. So 329 2/3 innings.
Okay.
And he became an outfielder. And we mostly, this time, usually I ask, always ask, especially new players, how would you sort of define Japanese baseball or how do you see Japanese baseball? And his was kind of an interesting take because he spent most of the time talking about the defensive play, which was fun. And also because he's a center fielder, which is kind of rare. We had a bunch of center fielders playing for the Omiuri Giants in the mid-1990s, but we haven't seen that many since.
That's true. Come to think of it, yeah.
Right. So let's hear Mr. Defense-minded Brian Bogusevic.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Brian Bogusevic, the new outfielder with the Oryx Blue Wave. Thank you for spending your time with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Now, tell us a little bit about your indoctrination to Japanese baseball, how it's been going, and maybe anything take you by surprise.
I don't think anything has caught me completely off guard. There are some things that are different from baseball in the States, especially in terms of the spring training regimen. But I had some warnings coming in and was told kind of what to expect. And so far, it's been a fairly smooth transition.
Okay, now I was talking to one of the former NPB scouts the other day, and he said that it's easy when you first get here to burn yourself out. Was that something you were aware of before you walked in the door?
Yeah, that was something that I was warned of, and I can see how that could definitely happen. The typical spring training day that they do here is a lot different from the States. In the States, you kind of do your work on your own and kind of get in what you need and then you're done. And here, it's more of a group effort, which means that there's a lot of reps, which means that if you're involved in all of them, you can kind of get worn out pretty quickly if you're not ready for it or if you're just, not expecting it.
Okay. Now, one of the things, I think before when we talked, you compared it to American football camp.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been in an American football camp?
No, but I imagine that this is what it would be like. But really, that was more off the field in terms of staying at the team hotel, okay. Team meals, meetings at the hotel after practice. That's kind of something that you don't see in the States where everybody, lives off on their own, and once they leave the field, they're off doing their own thing, whereas here it was almost a 24-hour-a-day type thing.
Okay, the other thing, I guess a huge difference, is I heard Kenta Maeda the other day saying about how Japanese spring training is short, but I think we're working on semantics there. Camp is shorter.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's short by any means. We've been here for 2 months, and we're only two games in right now.
Well, they refer to camp as the one that ends on February 28th.
Oh, yeah, well, in that case, yes, it is short, but there's 3 weeks of practice games after that, so it kind of makes it a little longer.
Now, how's the adjustment come to the, you know, to that long, you know, first you have camp when you don't play a lot of games. It's really different from the U.S. where you start preseason games like third, fourth day.
There was kind of an ease into it, I guess, with two, almost 3 weeks of just practices before the games even started, which, like you said, is a lot different where in the States you're a couple days of live BP and then you're right into games. But, you know, it was something that the team worked with us on. They told us not to wear yourself out too early. We actually made a schedule of, you know, when you're going to start playing games, how many at-bats you want to get total. So two here, three here, and so on, kind of easing into it. So it was something that they really helped us with to not get that burnout.
Now let me ask, you've been an outfielder for a while now, and do you have a specific regimen when you come into camp? You know, this is how many at-bats I want, this is how many swings I want to get, this is what I want to look for in camp, because now you've got a different kind of camp, and did that affect your preparation?
It did in terms of I had to schedule it out differently, but in terms of what I ended up getting done was what I wanted. I feel like it was more than enough. It was enough to prepare for the season. So it's kind of spreading it out over a longer period of time, but there's definitely no shortage of reps to get before the season starts.
Okay, it's a case sometimes of you negotiating with not negotiating with the team, but negotiating with yourself. This is something I need to do, and this is I need to do more than this, or I need to do less of this.
Yeah, and I think as a player, as your career goes on, you learn yourself and you learn your routines. And that was something that the team and the coaches was very receptive of, was kind of do what you need to do. We'll work with you on what you need to do. Don't be forced to do this if that's not something. If we're doing something you don't want to do, you don't have to do it. If we're not doing something that you need to do, we'll do it. So it was kind of a give and take, which seems to go pretty smoothly.
I'm going to have to ask now, you've been through this, and it's been just a short time, so there may be nothing, but have you been struck by anything they've done in camp or that you've seen in the spring training that you thought, well, why don't we do this in America?
Yes, honestly, just the speed with practice reps are taken. I don't see why you would go through things half speed, which is kind of, in the States, you start off slow. You know, your first couple of days of practice are really, really slow.
Okay.
And here it's full speed from day one, and, you know, it could cause that burnout effect over the length of time, but to do it for short periods of time, I think that's kind of, you know, quality repetitions.
But then a bit of a surprise, you just walk in the door and here we go, bang, bang, 100%.
Yeah, and especially the first day when we were doing base running drills and guys were sliding into the bases, until I've been here, I've never seen somebody slide in practice in my life.
Wow. Yeah, welcome to Japan.
Yeah.
Okay, slide in. Bring your sliding pants there.
Yeah, they have big pads for your whole leg. So that was something that I can honestly say I've never seen before.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so now you're two games into the season, and before, you know, we spoke in the spring training or the preseason, and you talked about the defensive requirements or things they were asking you to do on certain plays. Now, have you sorted through that, what the team's policy is going to be on? Because that was sort of a hit, and it seemed like a little difficult to judge.
Right, what we were talking about was, you know, different defensive alignments based on situation.
Mm-hmm.
And in spring training, we were kind of putting ourselves into alignments that wouldn't necessarily be used in that part of the game.
Okay.
Maybe in a late inning situation, not necessarily in the second or third inning, but we were doing it because the situation popped up and it was a chance to practice it.
Right.
And now that we're in a game situation, it's, you know, been more played accordingly to the score and the game situation, which is what was expected.
So you're not playing, you know, 50 feet behind second base in the first inning.
Right. You're not trying to cut down a guy at home in a do or die situation, you know, if you're up a couple runs in the third inning.
Okay.
Whereas if it's a tie game in the ninth, obviously you are.
Yeah. Well, sometimes in Japan we see sort of like this very hyper aggressive defense. It is a little more hyper.
It is more aggressive. It's a more aggressive style of defense. You kind of play to get outs on the bases, whereas, you know, you could be more conservative to where you're just playing for prevention, but it's definitely a more aggressive style, which, you know, could be beneficial if you're fundamentally sound and you're going to hit cutoff and you're not going to, you know, give up extra bases on the backside of throws to bases.
There's a lot of obviously there's a lot of attention paid to that, to those small elements.
Absolutely, and it has to be, because if you're as an outfielder specifically, if you're aggressively throwing to bases, you have to be conscious of the backside runners. So if you're just trying to throw guys out at third and home with no regard to the hitter coming around first base, you're going to put yourself in a situation to give up multiple runs when you were trying to save one to begin with. But the fundamentals are so sound that there is no missing of the cutoff man and there is no errant throws, so you can play that style and not give up anything on the backside.
Oh, maybe not errant throws, but no lazy throws.
No, there's no missing cutoff man. There's no kind of that airmail throw where you try to throw somebody out at home and then the two guys on the, and then now you got second and third instead of first and second. And, you know, you can play aggressively when you have confidence in your guys to do those things.
It's kind of a little different take on the game, but it's kind of fun too, I think, if you're
it is. It is, and it keeps you kind of, you know, in an offensive mindset when you're on defense. You know, you're aggressive. You're trying to get outs. You're not just there to, as an outfielder, you know, pick it up and throw it back in. You're trying to actively get outs instead of just, you know, do damage control.
Okay, now when you came here, you played the outfield a lot. And sometimes guys that come over from the majors, they see the Japanese outfielders, and at first they say, like, you know, I'm a center fielder, I'm a right fielder, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes their teammates kind of take them by surprise, mm-hmm. the way they play and with the energy they take into mm-hmm. practice. Is that...
No, I don't think so. After the first couple of days, you kind of get used to the speed with which
right.
practice is done. But, you know, I like doing it. I've always, you know, been a kind of a aggressive
okay.
practice
okay.
player. You know, I like to get my reps in at full speed and get, you know, get my work that way. So it wasn't something that really okay. took me back.
All right. Okay, well, I think you're going to fit in really well here in Japan from, you know, so far so good.
Hopefully, yeah.
Okay, so wish you a good and healthy season.
Thank you very
okay,
much.
Okay, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Hope so.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Buffaloes. Is that what that team's called? Wow. Okay, well, thanks again for spending your time with us, Brian.
I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
But I will look forward. I do look forward to talking to Brian when I get the chance to meet him.
How's yeah. that? Yeah, I was getting pathetic. So, I'm sorry. Okay. So, yeah, what would you like to comment on?
Well, first let me say that, you know, Brian looks like he fits in. He doesn't seem to be out of sorts, off balance. He doesn't seem to be out of place. He looks like he has a plan at the plate. He's making good adjustments. So both of those guys, Brent Morrill as well, they mm-hmm. look really good. And he sounded like that on the interview. That's the way it came across, that he was very smooth with his answers. And the thing that jumped out at me the most, I guess, was when he was talking about sliding in practice, that they never practice it in the States. And I was on a train listening to it, and I'm like, huh? You don't practice sliding? So what are we doing back home? Because I think in Japan, these guys use the ground out the first to practice their sliding all the time, or I'm sorry, ground out on the infield to practice their sliding at first base all the time. So I don't know, seriously, I mean are they worried about risking of injury, or I don't get why they wouldn't work on it, because we see guys get injured a lot sliding in the States. Now we know why.
Yeah, that did surprise me. But I've never been to a major league camp. The closest I've ever been to a major league spring training game was the, you know, a couple of games that the Japan national team played against the Chicago Cubs and San Francisco Giants mm-hmm. 3 years ago. So I can't really say I've seen camp.
Right, right. Me either. And then early on in the chat, he used the word warn a couple times, that he was warned before his pre-Japan arrival about what to expect. And that's probably a good word for it, because you talked to him about the fact that you can burn yourself out in just in training camp and spring before the games even start. And he did talk about, you know, how much the team just worked so hard every day. So and also how, and we've heard this before from other foreign players, about how the imports get to sit out some of those team routines in the workouts, and that they get to work on their own on the side and do what they, you know, do whatever it takes to get themselves ready. So I was glad to hear that Oryx was letting him do that. I think Tuffy Rhodes actually told me that Oryx was really good during his time there about letting him do what he needs to do to get ready. And I love to hear that, because that lets me know that they do understand the differences, and they do let that play out within the team.
Mm-hmm.
With the import players, and it's not, I'm sure it's not just Oryx, although I know the Giants are pretty strict.
I think they all modify, I think it's very rare when a team will come in and say, well, we're paying this guy, we know we're paying you $2 million to be here, but, you know, scrub the floors like you're a rookie.
Right.
You know, scrub the floors with your sweat from practice.
And the latrines as well.
Well, if you're a rock tent, perhaps, yeah. Yeah, and I think the interesting point about Oryx was I didn't have that impression they'd always been like that. I doubt if they were like that when Haruki Ihara managed them.
Yikes. Pull up your socks.
Exactly, but fortunately, and I like Ihara-san, so I don't want to say too much, but he's an old school guy, and he believes, you know, sort of baseball's is better the way it used to be.
Right, right.
So but what I heard from my colleague at Kyoto News about Oryx was that Junichi Fukura, the new manager, the interim guy last year, mm-hmm. is very popular with the players for his humanistic approach. So that sort of melds with that, you know, that vibe that, you know, they asked us what we wanted to do, and we modified and we worked within the groups, and, you know, this is what you need. And we planned it out. They asked us for a schedule. You know, they actually asked for input.
Hmm.
Oh, wow. That's original.
Right. Not the Koji Akiyama style of if I want your opinion, I'll beat mine into you.
Wow, that's harsh.
Hashtag hi.
I don't really know the whole story there, although I pretend to.
Okay, well, it comes across as that kind of attitude. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I like that aspect and input. Getting input like that seems unheard of.
Mm.
It really does.
And in any case, yeah, it was interesting. And I think the other thing that was interesting, as I mentioned before, was the defensive side, because specifically, and he referenced this was a discussion we had about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't know, you know, we're practicing in game times during the preseason games. We're practicing like throwing runners out on the bases. You know, we're practicing playing shallow, playing for one run all the time. And I get the feeling this isn't going to be normal. And I felt like saying,
oh. Dude.
I said, playing for one run in Japan. Wow. Yeah.
Playing for one run before the game starts.
Pretty much. Practice.
Yeah. And speaking of practice, I really like what he said about his approach with practice and him going at full speed, because – you know, when I was playing basketball, and I apologize for always referencing my basketball playing days, but I always wanted
accepted.
Okay. I always wanted my guys to go faster. I wanted the practice to be harder than the game, and I didn't want them to rest. I didn't want them to get water. I didn't want them to call fouls. I didn't want them to stop. You know, whatever happened, we take the ball out and keep going and keep playing and play like it was a game, because I wanted the games to be easy. And so when he said, why would you ever practice at half speed? I just love that. And I love, you know, he said real game quality versus pregame quantity. And I really like that. I thought that was excellent. And his approach, like I said, that seems to me as to be one of the reasons why he seems to just fit in.
I have to agree with you there. And I think, of course, I've talked about this in the past, and so I won't go into it with as much depth and redundancy as I usually would. But you know, I've asked Japanese managers and coaches about this, and you know, they said it's always a balance between quality practice, quality intensity in spring camp, and introductory nobody's going to get hurt warming up speed.
Mm.
Yeah, if we don't get anybody hurt, that's a quality camp.
Yeah. No. You know? Yeah, no.
Yeah, but there is that, you know, there's a part of them that says, you know, don't lose, don't get anybody hurt, don't lose the season in camp.
Yeah, I understand it.
Yeah, you understand it because you know that Japan is about not losing. You can lose the season if people get hurt in camp. But so winning is, again, subordinated to not losing. You don't have to actually learn anything or do anything positive, but if you don't lose it, well...
You're still in it.
Exactly. You're still in it in sort of a face-saving, idiosyncratic sort of we're all in this together and it wasn't our fault mentality. The problem with that is that in baseball, where everything depends on results, as baseball people will, you know, the same person who just told you where our goal is not to get anybody hurt will tell you that the baseball world is a world of wins and losses and the only thing that matters are results. But we didn't get anybody hurt.
Right.
So there's that dynamic always going on. But, you know, they believe that. You know, it's don't get anybody hurt. That's a success.
I understand that. I totally understand it. You don't want there are teams that suffer injuries in the spring and never get over it, or not. You know, they get off to a bad start and morale drops, and they don't think they can win. And even though it's a long season, it's the marathon that everybody talks about. They're walking the whole marathon because they don't think they can win.
Fair enough. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. And yeah, I thought that whole bit about negotiating the speed of practice and how much he enjoys the speed. I think most of the players who come over here do like that aspect of Japanese baseball, that there's a core intensity, for lack of a better word, that it just has – it has it. And his description of Major League Baseball is a little – I don't know if – is it pejorative? We're just here to throw the ball back to the infield.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite that, but I thought, you know, you never see bad throws. Oh, sure, you see bad throws all the time in Japan, but you don't see you rarely see by a Japanese player just a pointless throw from the outfield.
Yeah, you rarely see those, but I mean, it may happen too. And I know Brian had a play on Saturday, I think it was, where he was charging a ball and it got past him, and later on in the same game, he had a throw to the plate and let the backside runners move up. And I know they were trying to, like you talked about, trying to cut off that one run. So I don't know if it was his intent or the ball went higher than he expected it to go. But everybody's going to make mistakes. So
sure,
they happen. And, you know, pitchers make mistakes all the time where they're not hitting the location that they want. And
right.
We see it a lot. So
our favorite post-game quote is, well, I made one mistake and it cost me. I says, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, that is one. Because you see pitchers make a bunch of mistakes that get either fouled back, looked at, or missed.
Right.
Yeah, but and they miss location all the time. And again, I've never seen it. I mean, when I actually heard the word perfect game, I thought that's what it was, that the guy had thrown the ball where he wanted to throw it. Every pitch. Because that's, you don't hear that.
Wow. It's like baseball naivete 101.
Yeah, exactly. So, one thing I wanted to bring up is that Yoshio Itoi said that he thinks, and I saw this on the news, he thinks Brian is the fastest player in NPB.
Really?
Yeah. Very surprising. And probably he's faster than Itoi because Mr. Itoi, and I love him, he's got the most beautiful swing and I love the guy, but he has slowed down a lot.
Well, he's had bad wheels the last 2 years. Now, I've heard his mobility is still limited, but that's compared to last year limited. That's not compared to people like me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, even his last year limited was bad, and you can see a definite decline again this year. And today there was a ball that was hit that I was sure was going to be caught in right field. He was playing right, and he just couldn't get over there. Couldn't get back and couldn't get over. But he likes Bogey. I'm going to start calling him Bogey.
You can do that.
And maybe for two run hits that he gets, I'm going to call those double bogeys.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Doubles, two base hits will be double bogeys.
Something like that. So when you see it on Twitter, you heard it here first before I start doing all my little nicknames and all the other stuff that people like to talk about on Twitter. But Brian had recorded an RBI in each of his first six games for the Buffalo, right. So that was a good start for him. And like I said, he just seems like a natural fit here. So does Brent. They both look like they're going to fit in really well. So that's a really good pickup for the Buffaloes, and hopefully they can get it together here. They're not starting out well out of the gate, but they're the Buffaloes.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, just Conoco being healthy is, well, maybe they're just hoping. Well, Conoco's healthy this year.
But he's winless. After fading twice late in games.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, it happens, I understand, but he's their guy, and a couple times when they leverage situations where it's too early to take your ace out of a game,
mm-hmm.
but kind of late that you really want to make a decision that helps the team because it was a close game. And
keep it close. That's the guy's job. He can't control everything.
All right. Well, okay. Well, thanks to Brian. Let's talk about the Buffaloes a little bit more now. They finally took Hiroyuki Nakajima out of the shortstop spot, and he really was killing them in the field. And it wasn't that he wasn't making, I mean, we talked about it last week, that he wasn't making every play, because nobody makes every play. He was not making some plays that needed to be made, and balls that were hit to him that he ended up making disasters out of molehills, and that wasn't helping. And whether somebody gets in there who hits or not, they needed to get him out of that spot, which they finally did.
Mm-hmm.
The starters, I expect them to actually be better, but they're not going to dominate every day. So that's not a big concern to me, because they've been pitching fairly well. My concern is the bullpen. They have gone to the bullpen a few times. Tatsuya Sato hasn't done very well. Eric Cordier has been giving up runs, which you don't want your closer to do too much. Not two out of three outings you don't want him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the area that has me concerned. They're hitting well, you know, they're doing everything well, except they're buffaloing games away at the end. And
buffaloing games.
They're buffaloing them. The Buffaloes. Remember, I joked a long time ago about these dumb animals that were shot at a long time ago and killed for nothing. That, you know, that's buffaloing away something. You're there, you're right in position to win it, and then you do something to cause your team to lose. And they've been figuring out ways to lose, but it's so early. I mean, I had somebody tweet me about the standings, and I'm like, standings? They haven't even played 10 games.
Wow.
There's no reason to look at the standings right now. It's just you want to get games that you have in control. You want to win as many as you can, right? You're not going to win every day.
Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned this, but a lot of people I've talked to this year basically have told me that, in the last 15 years, the attitude of Japan about opening day
mm-hmm.
has really gradually shifted to a sort of longish view, long term. You know, 15 years ago, every manager, every player had to repeat what was regurgitated in the media, that opening day – winning opening day is like winning 20 games, you know, whatever. It was 20 times more important than any other game, and it was approached with that sort of, urgency. If you're not ready for opening day, your season's ruined. You know, it was that sort of, like, I just really bizarre, obsessive, compulsive kind of thing. And the guys I talked to this past week is, yeah, opening day, it's important. It's important like one of the other 143 games we play.
Right.
So
interesting. Yeah. Well, I think they avoided getting swept by the Lions in that opening series.
Yes. They've three times avoided sweeps.
Yeah. And that's where they are. But we talked about this last week as well. Masataka Yoshida, he tied a record for a hitting streak by rookies to start a season with six straight to open up the season. So he really looks like he's going to help them out, which is good. They've got really good pieces. This is why I picked them to finish in the playoffs. I mean, they've got a good core. that can carry them. But somehow they've got to figure out how to finish games off and take care of business at the end or just during the games. I mean, they've blown leads. They've blown plays. They've blown double plays or double play opportunities. And they haven't been able to finish off Masataka Yoshida the other night got thrown out at the plate. He was trying to score from first base on a double that went to right field. So I just have to assume that he's not that fast until I get to see him in person, because I thought he was going to score and he thought he was going to score and he was thrown out by plenty of room.
Mm-hmm.
So they just got to learn, but I think they have a good core, and I think I'm always sticking with my pick after the first month. I like to look at teams for the first month and assess, and that was if one thing that Bobby Valentine left me with, it was with that. He says, don't evaluate your team until after a month goes by. And I've said that before on the show, and I think that's right. I think you don't really know. There's so many moving parts and so many moving pieces right now that it's hard to figure out what's what. So let's see what you got after a month.
Well, at least a month. Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right, making a four-seam transition, I want to talk about plays at the plate and runs. I think, personally, teams are running, and we talked about the fact that one of the coaches at Cebu said the runners are going to be ruling the bases. And I think at first when I heard that, I thought that's silly. You know, and you said it. You said, well, what are we talking about, two or three plays at the plate a week? That could be 2.5 to 3 runs per week we were thinking about. And it seems like every night in every game, somebody's taking a chance and going to the plate, and a lot of the guys are scoring. And so there's really no way to measure, I don't think, the number of runs that have scored on plays that probably up to last year would have likely been outs because the catcher couldn't block the plate. Now he's got to open up a pathway, and so runners are trying to score a lot more. But you were skeptical about the plays at the plate, and I said it would be a factor, and it just seems to be more of a factor than we thought it would be, because the runners or the teams are sending runners. They're very aggressive and they're challenging. They're challenging everyone to make plays.
I've seen the other side. I think I've had more higher expectations for runs in some situations and seen, well, you know, if he's not blocking the plate, you got a chance to go. So why don't you go?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that a couple of times. Like, you know, you could have scored on that play. Like, why wasn't he going? But of course, that's, you know, having seen the throw or having seen the outfielder, you know, pick up the ball, you know, after the catch, the third base coach would have had to send the runner.
Right.
So that's probably just my lack of perception That's my perspective.
Hmm. What I'm also seeing is I'm seeing catchers, they're just lost. They don't know where to stand. They don't know how to receive the ball, and it's just a mess. And I think the biggest instance of this was the ninja slide that we saw. I like to call him J-Lo. This is Jose Lopez of the DeNA Bay Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And he scored at home on Wednesday against, who was it, the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants catcher Seiji Kobayashi received a very good throw. The infield was in. There was a runner at third, or J-Lo was at third. And he received a very good low throw from Luis Cruz, but he was too far in front of the plate.
Mm.
And I would say at least a foot and a half in front of the plate. And he got the ball in plenty of time, but J-Lo slid wide and spread his hands and avoided the tag. And then J-Lo dove back with his hands spread open and touched home plate. But Kobayashi dove at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, no, dude, you have the ball. You can block the plate with the ball, and he has to come to you. So all you have to do is sit on the plate and wait for him to come back to you. And he dove at J-Lo, and J-Lo did some kind of ninja dive thing and gets in, and he's safe. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? The best thing about that play, I think, was umpire, and I wanted to give him a shout-out, was Kyohei Makita is the umpire on that play. And he just made a great call. He was very patient.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't wait and assume, even though the throw was there and plenty of time to get the runner. And so it was a great play by him, J-Lo, and a bad play by Kobayashi because he just looked lost.
Mm. Well, that's what I have seen, and is the catchers. I think what they need to do is tell the catchers to watch third baseman take throws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't take throws, you know, they don't take throws 5 feet from third base.
Right.
No, they're not waiting for the ball, in on the left field side of the bag. They're not waiting on the home plate. They're not waiting halfway towards the shortstop position. They're waiting at the bag. You can wait at the bag. That being near the bag, and this is where I think NPB got it completely wrong, is by deciding to punish the catchers additionally by warning them if they break the rule. But that's like, well, one, there's no out. Two, a run scores. And three, do it again and we're going to throw you out of the game.
Right.
Like, yeah. And these catchers who were thinking, wow, you know, people aren't going to plow into me now that they're going to say, can I set up near first base?
Right.
And I'll run the guy down. Because that's what we're seeing. We saw a guy in the Yokohama rookie catcher,
Tobashira,
setting up 4 feet from home plate towards down the first base line, and he gets the throw, and now he's got to race the runner to the bag.
He could have had
1 foot on the plate, not blocking it. But of course, here's the other thing. If you put a foot on the plate, you're trusting that some umpire is not going to warn you and, just call the guy safe.
Well, this is what I was thinking, is they said you have to open up a path to the plate. But it doesn't mean open up the whole plate. And I think the catchers have to start treating the plate like the pitchers do.
Yeah.
Stay out of the middle.
Yeah.
Pick a side.
Exactly. You do it any base.
Exactly.
You stand on one side, you give the runner the other side, and say, come on, baby. Here's the tag waiting for you.
What they should do, I mean, of course, we have this misnomer out there that this is a new rule.
Yeah. It's 160 years old. Japan's an old country.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's new to them.
young leaders in the Liberal Democratic Party tend to be ones who are who can walk fast enough on their walkers that you have to follow them. You have to follow them to get a quote from them because they're not going to sit still long enough for you.
Right. Yeah, I'm just concerned. I don't like what I'm seeing, and these guys are using, there's, like you said, setting up in front of the plate too far, and you can put your body at least on the foul line, and still there's a path for the runner to get to the plate.
You can put your foot on the plate. As long as the runner has a place to slide into the plate, you're not blocking it.
Right. And there was a play today in the Oryx Lotte game in which Tatsuhiko Tamura, he's a fellow catcher. He's the catcher of the Lotte Marines, and he was the runner, and he was easily tagged out. But then Marines manager Tomo Ito comes out of the dugout, and he's challenging the call. And I guess what he did is he urged the umpires to talk about it, maybe take a look at it on replay, because we know they're the only ones who can decide if they're going to replay these plays at the plate. And I think what Ito was complaining about was that the catcher of the Oryx catcher, Katsuki Yamazaki, had gone into the baseline and was blocking the path to the plate. And when you saw the replay, you could see that, yes, he did cross over the foul line and was blocking the plate, but he had to catch the ball. And he had the ball in plenty of time before Tamura got there. So the call stood. To be honest, I don't even know why the umpires decided to take a look at it, because it was an easy play to call. But they acquiesced and they went back there and they spent a hot minute looking at it, and they popped right back out and said, safe. I'm sorry, out, just like we said. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they needed to do that, but that's the kind of play. So, we're seeing a lot. I think people have to, everybody's got to adjust to the rule, but I don't think the umpires, again, we know that they're the only ones who can decide to whether they're going to watch the replay or not, and I don't think they needed to in this case.
Well, I mean, that is, of course, the biggest part of the judgment call is, at what point are you impeding the runner? You know, if the guy's basically, they're gonna say that if the guy's, more than a couple of steps past third base, you better get out of the line, because he's got about a second to decide whether he's going to slide or not, or how he's going to slide. And if you're there and you haven't got the ball and you're in the way,
start moving.
Okay, now the old, it's interesting you brought up the bit about he had to be there to catch the ball, because that's the excuse that was always used to allow the runners to block the plate.
Mm-hmm.
The catcher is there because he has to be there to catch the ball, which is wrong because you could catch the ball behind the baseline. You could catch it in front of the baseline. The only time you have to catch it, to be honest, the only time you have to be somewhere to get the ball is when it's coming straight down.
Well, yeah. Know,
more
yeah.
or less, it's on a line.
Yeah. So in this case, he you know, Yamazaki had to move up the line a little bit and across because of the angle that the ball was coming. So it just right. took him into the runner's path. Right. But he caught the ball and had the ball and was waiting. So.
And when he does that, yes. And if he does, if the ball does take you into the path of the runner, then the collisions are incidental and the umpires just have to throw up their hands and say, oh, well, you know, that's it. Exactly. This stuff happens. So. Yeah.
And you're out, son. Hope you're all right. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about, I don't even know how to phrase this. Is it minor league projections or?
No, they're not projections. I'm just talking about some minor league players.
Some minor league players. All right, Jim's. This is Jim's topic, so take over, son.
Son. Wow. Thanks, Dad.
Okay, bro. Oh,
I can deal with that. Okay. Anyway, I had some time to kill the other day when I was at the ballpark, and I didn't have the LAN connected to my my Apple. And so I just had to, you know, play around with my database. And something I like to do every year is look and see which minor leaguers had like really outstanding seasons last year that we should take seriously as prospects, maybe people we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I churned through the numbers and I came up with three guys, three young players.
Very young.
I mean, guys in their early 20s. Sometimes you'll get guys who are 28 or 29 or 30 or like, you know, Barbaro Canizares or somebody like that who, you know, who basically knows all the adjustments to make
mm-hmm.
and just beats the living daylights out of a lot of these less experienced minor league pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see, a 20-year-old kid or a 21-year-old or a 22-year-old doing it, you know, that's something you need to look out for because most of these guys who do really well at this level – for a period of time tend to have really good careers once they get a chance to have those careers.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I came up with three names and I came up with three guys who had the best seasons. And the first one came up as a Taiga. I love the name. You know, how can you not be Hanshin Taiga?
Right.
Hanshin Taiga Egoshi.
Yeah.
Who Tom O'Malley, the Tigers batting coach, was raving about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he played, you know, he hit pretty well with the first team and he played pretty well on occasion, despite his, you know, his troubles with defense at first. But they had him playing in center field and he wasn't a disaster. So and I was thinking, you know, who is he similar to as a player? You know, who had similar minor league seasons to the ones he had at his age?
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with there were actually three guys who had similar seasons to him. In terms of quality at the same age. One was Yuki Yanagita.
Oh.
We've heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
And another was Akira Nakamura, also with the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, he's not at that level yet because Yanagita took a couple of steps forward. Nakamura took a couple of steps forward. He needs to take a couple of steps forward. And so that's kind of interesting. But again, they're not bad players.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't something that's happening to everybody.
Yeah, I remember Egoshi last year, and he showed some flashes, and he hit fairly well. Wasn't very good with the leather, and I think he was on a good path, and I he still might be. But then along came this season Shun Takayama, who's also an outfielder,
right.
And this kid is just hitting everything. He hit right. He hit a pitch the other day that bounced in front of the plate, like
it, wow.
He didn't hit it for a hit, but he grounded out. But he looks like he's going to be a fixture. He kind of reminds me of Kensuke Tanaka. I mean, he's really good with the bat control. So,
yeah.
Egoshi, you better get better with the defense or he's not going to be up playing.
About 10 years ago, the Tigers had four outfielders. They had four really, really good minor league outfielders who basically they spent the bulk of their careers playing in the Western League.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just loaded, and the team was just going like, no, those guys are minor leaguers.
Right.
So, and Egoshi looks like he's ready to follow in the footsteps of Masato Akamatsu and Go Kida and Kodai Sakurai and Lin Weiju and those fellas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, who's your next guy?
Okay, the next guy is Seiji Uebayashi.
Love that kid.
Yeah. Now, who at the age of 19, he posted an offensive winning percentage of 799. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the term of offensive winning percentage, this is a rough estimate of if you had a team with average pitching and defense and nine hitters like this guy in the league he's playing in, what would their winning percentage be?
Ah.
Okay, so if you see seven, so when you get up in the 800 area, you're talking really, you know, really good stuff. Of course, it's minor leagues, but still, Seiji Uebayashi at the age of 19 had a very unique season. Players, you know, I was looking now, unfortunately, my minor league data from the 1990s essentially all evaporated when I had a hard disk crash. So I don't have my stuff with Ichiro Suzuki in there and so on and so forth, unfortunately. So my stuff dates back mostly to 2002. But the only minor league player who had has had a similar year, as good a year as Uebayashi at that age since 2002, was Toshiaki Imai.
Hmm.
In 2004, and he was a big player the next year.
Yeah, helped Lotte win the 2005 Japan Series, and now is playing with the Rakuten Eagles. Yeah, Uebayashi impressed me last year because I saw him in August hit a grand slam.
His debut.
I think it was against Lotte, and this team is so talented, the Hawks, that he just can't get on the field. But then I saw in the offseason, during the offseason, I saw a little feature story on him on TV and talked about how his speed and how he's trying to develop himself as a hitter who can hit to all fields and hit with power and all this stuff. And he's coming. They've just got a logjam of talent at the top team level, and they can't get him on the field, but somebody gets hurt, somebody has a bad stretch, and I think we're going to see him, and it's going to be hard to get him out. All right, who's the last guy?
The last guy is a Dragon, Shuhei Takahashi, who's now a third baseman. He had played shortstop in the past. He's a career 237 hitter in the Central League, but he's 22 now, and he had a pretty good season as a 20-year-old, and then he had a better season as a 21-year-old. Now, as a 20-year-old, he compared to some, you know, I don't know, I don't want to spoil it by saying the guys he compared to, because there were a bunch, some good guys, some guys we don't know. But the first three just really caught my eye. Yosuke Morioka.
Former Dragon with the Swallows now, yeah.
Yep. Takahiro Donoe.
Yeah, Takehiro. Yeah, he's with the Giants now. Keeps getting pinch hit singles for him.
Tepe Tsuchiya.
Also a former Dragon who went to the Rakuten Eagles.
Yeah, three guys who had really good minor league stuff with the Dragons, and the Dragons just never quite saw that they couldn't quite – well, Morioka and Tsuchiya, they really never gave a shot to. Donoe, they did give – they let him be a pinch hitter on the first team and a part-time outfielder. So, but some other good guys on that list, Tomoaki Egawa, who's now – outlived his usefulness, really, unfortunately, because he just hasn't had a good chance. Again, Akira Nakamura, Kodai Sakurai, who I mentioned, who was a heck of a hitter with the Tigers. At the age of 21, he graduated a little bit. Takahashi's value comps are Munenori Kawasaki.
But yeah, that's a good name.
Yep, and he speaks English.
Ha ha ha.
And Taisei Makihara, who is an interesting guy since we're talking about the Hawks. And Taisei Makihara is even faster than Uebayashi, although he's basically a slap-hitting singles guy. But he's really good at it. So anyway, so those are the guys that are kind of interesting. And
yeah. With Takashu, I call him Shuhei Takahashi, Takashu. So
Takashu.
When you see me on Twitter, that's who I'm talking about. And I love the swing. And I remember last year someone asked us about which young player we were going to be focused on before the season began. And we both said Tomoya Mori with the Lions.
Sure.
And his comment after we did the show and he heard it, he says, well, he liked Shuhei Takahashi. And I said, I love the swing. Just don't like the discipline. He's never been able to lay off bad pitches, he swings it. He was swinging at just about everything. When he was making contact on good pitches, he was hitting a lot of doubles. In that, I think you said when he was 20,
mm-hmm.
he had a lot of doubles on the first team, and I thought, man, this kid's going to be good, and he showed a lot of promise. But they really didn't have a position for him. They stuck him at third base. I'm not convinced he's a third baseman, but you know he's going to fit into what they're doing right now. He can maybe learn this the position. And I also thought he reminded me of a young Masahiko Morino who's on the team, on the Dragons, a left-handed hitter. So I'm looking forward to big things from him. He certainly has had a good start to the season. He's going to get a chance to play and had a big grand slam the other night against the Carp in their bullpen, which we'll get to later with one of the questions. But, yeah, those are interesting guys. I like all three.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about some skipper trends so that we'll make a seamless transition since the skippers are not pitching at all. And you wanted to talk about guys who won in both their first and second years as field managers.
Right. See, I was thinking, you know, we did our prediction show and somebody picked the Swallows to win again.
Oh, who's that guy?
I don't remember. Wasn't it?
Wasn't the correct response is... Not me.
Okay. So anyway, and I was thinking, well, how often does a manager win his first two seasons in MPB? And the answer is not very gosh darn often.
Thank you for cleaning it up. PG-13, baby.
Okay. Now, we've had – so and I was thinking in particular, you know, what are the chances that the Swallows under Mitsuru Manaka or the Hawks under – Kimiyasu Kudo, since they were both first-year managers last year, would win the Japan Series or win their league 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to say the odds are really tough for Manaka. And I'm not talking about, you know, off to a bad start to the season because the Hawks aren't the Hawks yet.
Yeah, they're just
they will be, but they're not yet.
Yeah, they're just the sleeping Hawks.
Yeah. They're sort of waiting for one to burn themselves out, you know, chasing games in April and May, and they'll just go, okay, let's wait. They'll be playing 600 ball pretty much by the time.
They're probably doing what real Hawks do, which is assess their prey.
I don't think it's that. I think it's they want to win, but the things are not just quite clicking as they tended not to do before. They tended to underperform a lot anyway. But long story short, there are three managers who have won with their first 2 years with a team. Now, the first is, we kind of have to throw him out a little bit, because that's Motoshi Fujita, won in 1989 and 1990 with the Yomiuri Giants. He was their new manager.
Right.
But we have to sort of throw him out because he also managed the Giants before that. He was in his second stint as Giants manager.
Okay.
Okay, so let's kind of discount him. Okay, then we have another guy who won with the Cebu Lions. Tetsuro Hirooka won the PL in each of his first two seasons with the Cebu Lions in 1982 and 1983.
Yep.
But he was also not a rookie manager, nor a first-time winner, having won the Central League in 1978 with the Swallows.
Uh-huh.
Okay, which brings us to the only rookie manager to win, and he won three in a row. Try that one on. Masaaki Mori of the Cebu Lions.
Huh.
Only guy. Now, he took over Hirooka's team. Hirooka quit after the 1985 Japan Series loss to the Tigers. And then, interestingly enough, he and Mori became enemies because he assumed his head coach would quit with him.
Oh.
Instead, his head coach took the job.
Nice.
And they sort of they had a parting of ways after that.
You think?
And he managed.
Excuse me, can I have my knife back before you leave?
Wait, hold on. Hold on a second. It's still in your back.
Yeah, that's mine.
Right. So he won for 3 years with the team that Hirooka had built.
Nice.
So, okay. I guess what I'm saying here is, if you're the Giants or you're the Cebu Lions, if you're a dynasty, then you have a chance. So the odds are very low on the Swallows.
But very high on the Hawks, because they basically have a dynasty going.
I think, absolutely. I think Kudo has a really good shot at being the second skipper after his former skipper, and Kudo, being a member of those Cebu Lions, has a good chance of being number two.
All right, some notes now. We've seen some teams opting to go with short rotations out of the gate. The Giants were one of those teams, the Carp, the Tigers, they all went with their opening starters on Thursday. So that was something that caught my eye, because, you know, I like to say that these pitchers in Japan only work once a week. Mm. So blah, blah, blah. But that caught my eye. I'm just wondering, I thought the Tigers actually had more guys, and they threw Iwasada, I think it was on Saturday.
Correct.
And he threw a great game. I don't know why they skipped him. So
Well, because they expected him to pitch like he normally does, which is which is five innings.
Which was good enough to beat the Bay Stars, is what you're saying.
No, he pitched well.
If they expected his usual game, then they expected what he would be.
They expected him to be good enough to be the Bay Stars. Well, he needed to be better than usual to beat the Bay Stars this time.
Yes, and he was. He was excellent.
And the quote of the day from that game was from Yasutomo Kubo, mm-hmm. who said, "The way we're playing, the only way I'm going to get a win is if I shut somebody out."
# high heat. Good luck, dude. Yeah. Well, we did see at 41, Hiroki Kuroda shut out the Giants the other day. So that was... maybe you can go back and look at that tape.
No, he didn't need any help. He pitched to Kubo was really good. So.
He was good too, yeah. So, and then the Giants too, I was kind of surprised about that, because they looked good using the five-man rotation. But then on Sunday, they started the kid Imamura.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't get it. Why did they save him for the Carp? And you know, they ended up winning the game in 12 innings. They scored a run in the 12th inning to beat the Carp, so it paid off for them, and the kid pitched well. But I don't know why they couldn't have started him the other day, so I don't know.
Well, I understand why the Pacific League teams with short rotations, because they only played five games their first week.
Yeah, it totally made sense. But
they saved their opening day starters for Friday.
Right. And then I noticed something the other day, and I sent you an email about it, and it was about our darling Shohei Ohtani and his home runs. And I said, man, you know, I saw him hit this ball out to left, and then the next night he hits one to left center. I'm sorry, yeah, to left, and then I guess it was center.
It was left and left center.
Okay. And
left center and left, yep.
Okay. And so I said, you know what, it seems to me that most of his home runs are gone that way. And you looked them up.
Well, I was thinking exactly, I was looking them up as you said that.
No wonder you got back to me so quickly. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I can send Jim Allen an email and hope that within 24 hours I get a response.
That's like hoping that Iwasada hold the Bay Stars to less than five runs. You know? It's like, okay, well, I'm not holding my breath.
I don't know about that, because I know where Iwasada is. I don't know where you are, what you're doing, or anything, and I don't get
I'm
a response.
Sorry. Mom, I wish it had called.
So Jim, he said he was looking it up. So he said to left field, down the left field line, zero in his career. He's got
had one today. He came with about 5 feet of getting one today.
Yeah, it was foul. Yeah, it was just foul. So he's got 20 career home runs, zero down the left field line, five to left field, three to left center, four to center field, two to right field, and six. I'm sorry, two to right center and six to right field. And so if you add it all up, he's got to center field to left field, he's got 12 home runs. And from right center to right, he's got eight. So, yes, we were correct. We were both correct then. You had the same feeling, you said?
Yeah, pretty much. No, actually, I was the other way. I was, because I was having a Yuki Yanagita sensation that I remember him going really, really deep to Cebu Dome, mm-hmm. out to center, and going deep to center at Sapporo Dome, and thinking, wow. But when I said a Yuki Yanagita moment, I was thinking that Yanagita, he hit some absolute bombs this spring, I mean, like, he had one to right field. He must have hit it 20, 30 rows past the right field foul pole, and he hit one 15 rows down the left field line for an opposite field shot. That really impressed, and I thought, wow, and that's new for him. And so I was sort of in that, you know, maybe this is the new thing with Ohtani is opposite field, but no, he's got power at all fields.
Yeah, I remember I did a blog post about it. He had added some weight, I think it was 8 kilograms in the offseason, a muscle, and his reasoning behind that was because he wanted to throw with the same velocity but with less effort. So that he could last longer or deeper into games. But it seems one of the residual effects is his power to the opposite field is up a lot. So he has really looked good. Yeah, really.
Well, he was in there today. Of course, he was out there 2 days after. Now, this is a new thing because it used to be, he started the season on March 25th on a Friday, and he didn't bat until the following Tuesday. Didn't bat in a game until the following Tuesday. So I'm thinking, you know, how slow are the fighters going to take this? Or going to go back to that routine, you know, where he bats twice a week or once a week or something. But no, he was in the lineup today. He pitched again on Friday, and he was in the lineup today. And he went 1-for-3 with a single, and he also hit a rocket to somebody that was a ground out.
Mm-hmm.
So he hit the ball pretty well. And then before he hit the single, he also just missed foul down the left field line. So he was hitting it pretty good, and he and Brandon Laird were raking it in practice. I had to ask Brandon about that. You'll hear that one next week, so I won't spoil the secrets.
Okay. All right, another Shohei Tateyama of the Swallows didn't look good in his start with the – I think it was in the home opener for Yakult, and he was flipping some pretty weak sliders right down Broadway, and I just don't think it looks good for him. Maybe it's just me. I said he didn't have stuff. He didn't have top team stuff last year, but they pitched him in the postseason. They pitched him at the end of the year, and they started out with him this year on the mound, but I really can't see a reason why they would bring him back up if his stuff doesn't look better soon.
Well, he just never left pitches. He never left a lot of pitches where they could do him damage in the past. And he never walked anybody. You know, he was really fine. And last year, those walks, he basically learned to pitch around dozens of walks. I mean, just bags of walks that he was not used to doing before. And he just gutted it out. It was amazing. But this year, without better stuff... That ain't gonna happen.
Yeah. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes to us from Ray Villa on Twitter. And he says, is there any promise left in Tomohiro Annaku's arm? And Tomohiro Annaku is the hard-throwing kid who threw 700-something pitches in high school and was drafted in the first round of the 2014 draft by the Rakuten Eagles. And Ray also asks, what's his realistic ceiling now? And I say, yes, there's a lot of promise left in his arm because he's not hurt. His arm looks fine. His delivery is maybe the equivalent to a Kazuhiro Hatakeyama batting form. there's a lot of moving parts.
You make it sound like he's what's that guy, Carter Capps?
Oh yeah, Carter Capps is the traveling pitcher.
Put a cap on that guy.
But I mean, you know, his problem is his control. It's not where it needs to be, or it wasn't where it needed to be for him to make the first team out of camp, and he's not able to locate consistently. You know, he'll throw four good pitches and then one hittable one, and that's, you know, the mistake that he makes in that at bat is the one that gets rocketed somewhere. So his velocity is fine. In fact, I think he talked about in camp that he was going to be more focused on reducing his velocity and getting a better command of all of his pitches. So I don't think there's a problem with his arm. I think he's fine physically, although he had some issues last year. And I don't think the ceiling is any different from what it was when the team drafted him. I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but this past weekend, I think it was Saturday, he got an Eastern League start. And he tossed 8 innings. He struck out 9 and only allowed 1 run, scattered 8 hits. You know, that's pretty good. Before that, I think he had thrown in 1 game on the farm and 3 innings, a run, and, you know, nothing bad. But he had 6 one walk and 6K. So, I mean, he's doing fine on the farm. The problem is you don't want him on the farm. You want him up on your first team helping you out. And the thing, it came to me today as I was watching the Eagles blow yet another game with the bullpen. They need somebody who can be a setup guy or a guy in long relief. I think they should bring him up to the first team and put him in the bullpen and just have him go out and throw a couple innings or an inning here and there. Because their bullpen is really a dumpster fire right now. It just can't. I mean, they've got Yuki Matsui and that's about it. And everybody else, it's just like, you know, let's hope. And they keep losing games. And yet, you know, they're a game over 500, which is the thing that I look at early on, not where they are in the standings. And that's good for them. And they had won three in a row. They had a chance to win today's game, but it was a bullpen game. So they actually, in reality, didn't have a chance to win the game. But anyway, what's your feelings about it?
A couple things. I just took one look at his Eastern League pitching line, and he's got 15 Ks in 11 innings. So I think the Eagles are not about to release him yet.
Good one.
As for his long-term ceiling, I would say it's high. And it's high for the reason that John stated. Well, of course, you know, you have to figure out he's going to need to settle down his mechanics eventually. And I think that is going to happen. And hopefully you want it to happen before, you know, he gets hurt trying to do something weird, or before he has a Yusei Kikuchi moment and says, you know, I was hurt here in high school and it hurts here again. He says after coming out of the game in the fifth inning with his arm blown out.
Right.
So other than that, I think his ceiling's pretty good. His ceiling's better, higher now than it would have been 15, 20 years ago when Japanese teams would go, wow, he can strike people out. I'll bet. Let's see how many guys he can strike out in 200 innings. You know, but, you know, he could be Kimiyasu Kudo, who had a long career. Well, I don't know. He had a long career for a lot of reasons, but one reason was he didn't get overworked when he was a kid because he couldn't throw strikes.
Right.
So I think that will help him. Now, as to your thing, we should put him in short relief. I don't know that that's not what they're thinking, and I don't know if there is a plan. But I wouldn't, you know, I think it's too early to be thinking, well, we need to change our plan. I know the Eagles do have a plan. Nashida told me he had a plan. Let's put it this way. I know Nashida told me he had a plan. Whether he actually has one or not is another story.
Right.
But you know, it could be the plan that they're going to use him in some role, and that's the role, you know, they've set up for him. And so in which case, yeah, go ahead with your plan. There's no reason to throw it out after. In fact, there's really no reason to throw it out at all because, you know, it's what you're planning to do. No reason to just, like, do U-turns all the time. It's okay. Hard to go forward that way.
All right, the next question is another high heat question. It's from Stuart Miller, and he says, is it too early to panic about the Cubs bullpen? Jim?
Oh, well, that, you know, depends on whether one has anxiety disorder. Because I think then, yeah, sure, panic away. You know, I was thinking about the Cubs bullpen the other day. I mean, probably not half as much as John thinks about the Cubs bullpen or any other team's bullpen. But it occurred to me, I was talking with my coworker, you know, and he said, you know, how hard can this be? And I said, it's not really hard, but it's harder than it looks, which is having all the relievers you need, you expect to use to be ready in certain situations. And being prepared at that time and not overworked before that time and knowing what situations are, you know, an equal amount of preparation and information.
Mm-hmm.
And conditioning and coordination is a big word there. And I get the impression that the Carp really don't have that going on, that sort of like they know the pitchers they want to bring in certain situations. But I think the long term plan is not settled. You know, so for example, if A, B, we want A, B, and C to pitch today, but we're going to need B and C tomorrow and D also, but not D. They need to have a plan for, you know, what's not going to happen today, but who's going to pitch tomorrow and who's going to pitch the day after that. And to me, that's where the Carp seem to be falling down in the sense of how are we going to manage the bullpen over a course of days?
Right.
They seem to be like saying, well, these guys are available today. And then whoever's burned out today won't be available tomorrow, and that's their plan.
Okay. I don't think they need to panic, or is no. My answer is no. The short okay. answer, and I say, good. Remember, Daichi Osada isn't around, and they have a lot of new pieces. The manager Koichi Ogata has to find what he likes, who he can use in certain situations. I think he's still learning about these guys, how they're going to react to pitching on this level. Some of them don't have a lot of experience. Some of them you don't want pitching in leverage situations. Len Nakata is one of them. I think facing Takahashi or Takashu the other day with the bases loaded, they just didn't have anybody else to go to. They left him out there. He gave up the grand slam. Jay Jackson, obviously he's new. He pitched one good inning today on Sunday, and then the next inning he got charged with the loss. He gave up the go-ahead runner. Shota Nakazaki, the closer, he's still learning how to close. This is just, he hasn't even been doing this for a year.
Give him a stapler.
Okay. Oscar Nakaoshi. Yeah, he's new.
Well,
he's new.
We've been watching him.
Yeah, he's had a good spring, but spring, as I told you people before, it's fake baseball. Don't believe it. And he was really good in the spring, and now he's just an average guy. So they've got to figure out when to use him and what the best situation is for him.
I thought he was really good in 2013 WBC, but that's just me.
Okay. Yeah, he was. But, I mean, this is still, it's a different situation for him. That's tournament. This is every day. They've got some other pieces. They've got guys like Alan Cudi who could come in and do some stuff. They've got Ono. They've still got Ryuji Ichioka. They've got some guys. They've got some things they can still do. So I don't think, I think it's a moving, fluid situation. I don't think things like letting your 41-year-old hurler go the distance when you probably could have taken him out an inning before that, or at least an inning before, maybe even in the seventh if you trusted your bullpen. So I think the Carp might be thinking about pushing the panic button or not pushing the button on their relievers, because they don't really know what they're going to get on a day-to-day basis. But I think it's, they just have to work it out. And once they figure everything out, I think it's going to be decent, because I think they have the parts in there.
I do too. I just think it's a matter of them, settling down and making, making decisions. And I think your description of a fluid situation is very accurate. I mean, the whole season is a fluid situation. When do you panic? When do you give up on the plan? And considering they usually know more, you know very little from results, because small, hits go one way or balls bounce the other way, and things turn for the worse in what is basically a good situation.
Yep, I like that. I like that statement that you learn very little from results, because what you want to do is get the process right.
Exactly. And so if they have a process they like, or they're making, and I expect everybody makes progress with their processes as the season goes along, and they realize how things work together and how pitchers are able to get certain kinds of batters out and work in certain situations comfortably and are ready to be prepared for those situations, that will get better. I saw that last year get better, but it's a new group of pitchers, and so everybody's figuring it out. So, don't throw the plan away just because it doesn't look like it's working now.
Okay.
And they obviously know whether, they have a better grasp of how much better it's working than we do.
Okay. And then we have one comment from our buddy Michael Westbay.
Hi, John and Jim. Michael here. Love the show as always. Last week, one of you asked, who was the one team who had not hit a home run during the first series of the season? And I was thinking, that question would have been better asked the other way around. Who was the one team who had not given up a home run during the first series of the season? Of course, that team did go back home and give up a whole bunch of home runs to the Giants. But, hey, that's what happens. As I said, love the show. Keep up the good work.
All right, Michael. Well, let's see. Yeah, sorry we couldn't read all the minds of the listeners. Yeah, I wonder what team that was. Must have been the Bay Stars. But I would say the question of who didn't give up a home run is not as interesting as who didn't hit a home run. Right. I don't know. Maybe it's me. I've heard the phrase chicks dig the long ball, and I gotta admit the guys do too. So I'm going to go with the same kind of question again. And asked Jim what teams have yet to hit a home run in NPB.
Hold on.
No,
I'm supposed to know that.
You can't look it up.
I'm supposed to care.
You don't look it up. You just answer.
I don't know.
I don't know. Okay.
I don't know.
The Eagles and the Buffaloes are the two teams.
I knew that 2 hours ago, but you know what happens to short-term memory when you get to be my age.
It's turning into no-term memory.
Hashtag high heat.
I remember where you live, Gibson.
You know? Well, that's good. And you got to remember what time it is. It is time to wrap this thing up. So thank you very much for the questions and for the comment. And any questions you have, send to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat @JBWPodcast. And you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. And look for a new project from us soon. We will have it as soon as we can get it together. All right. Thanks a lot and enjoy your baseball.
Ciao.